Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you once again for joining us. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as improving your business, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I've been so fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor, okay? Please check out one of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as dynamic co-hosts, discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. And I want you to know that after you listen to this show, you will know lots of people that can benefit from this. So please know that this is just another way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, I am happy to say that with me once again is my incredible co-host, international speaker, author, and kindness expert, Gabriella Von Rey. And for those people that usually see me at the gym and ask where in the world she is, she's right here in studio.
One more time before I travel again.
That's right. So now, one of the things that, and the topic we're going to be talking about has to do with being the most powerful woman in the room.
Yes.
Yes.
And wow.
Yes. Well, and I want everybody to know that, you know, if you haven't heard Gabriella speak, you will realize that this is someone who may be small in stature, but she is powerful when she's speaking and she makes a difference.
Aw, thank you. But so, everyone, I'm the only person in the room at the moment. I mean, the only woman in the room.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Alan is a male. So.
Yes. But when you're speaking, and one of the things that's nice is, and for those that don't know, so Gabriella has the Dare to Be Kind movement. And with this movement, she is traveling around the world. This is a 2-year tour, and she is going and speaking at schools, at colleges, at Rotary clubs, universities, any sort of business group that is getting together and wants somebody to come in and talk about how you can make a difference in the world, and sometimes by doing so, by a simple act of kindness.
Yep.
And so share with them a little bit about kind of, you know, what you're doing now, what the next steps are on your journey.
Well, you can imagine, first of all, that when you talk about kindness, people kind of glaze over. I mean, I want to be really honest about that. People really do. And so because they're so afraid that you're going to talk about lovey-dovey stuff, and nothing could be further from the truth, in the sense that I thought it was clear by the way I gave it the name, you know, Dare to Be Kind. Because you have that component of having to dare. You mm-hmm. have to dare to step out of your comfort zone. You have to dare to be ready to be rejected. Even by a homeless person, you can be rejected, guys. It's really true. And so there's that entire component of, shall I or shall I not? So Dare to Be Kind is saying, yes, I shall. I do it, no matter the outcome, right? So that's one. And for the corporates out there, even universities and schools, if you just say, oh, I'm going to talk about kindness, it doesn't really work. So in every single case, I've added something. I've added something that they can relate to so that the conversation becomes way more open and diverse. So for the corporates, I've added communication, because communication, vulnerability, and kindness go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, it's just not possible. And I call that talk, Watch Your Delivery. Because the way we talk, we are uncensored, unfiltered, and it's absolutely unacceptable the way we talk to one another or text to one another. Or has anyone opened their Facebook this morning? Yeah, I rest my case
mm-hmm.
right there. I don't want to look through it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's for the corporates. Now, the universities and the schools, I speak about two things that interest them a lot, which is diversity, because diversity is truly here to stay. It's not going anywhere, guys. And the nice part is when I explain it, people actually like the diversity. See, it's just something we're afraid of when we don't know. And if we bring more education, more awareness to everything, then we empower people. And if you think that Dare to Be Kind, we're asking you to think like us, be like us, nothing could be further from the truth. This is not a religion. This is a lifestyle. We're just giving you little tips of how in your daily life you can add it. It's up to you. And do we fall from the bandwagon from time to time? Of course we do, including myself. But I can't anymore when I drive, even through traffic in LA, because it says with big letters, Dare to Be Kind. So I let everyone go on the freeway. So I take about 15 minutes longer to arrive somewhere just because of the lettering. But you know what? It makes others really happy.
That's right. And that's what it's all about.
And that's what it's about.
Yes. And, you know, and you touched on so many great things. And I think that our guest is as well is going to touch on a lot of the same things, which
exactly.
again is why I was so glad that you were able to be here with us
too.
Because there's, I think there's such great synergy. So let's talk a little bit about the topic today. And our topic, which is also the title of our guest's new book, is The Most Powerful Woman in the Room, Command an Audience and Sell Your Way to Success. Our guest, Lydia Finette, is the managing director of Christie's and seasoned auctioneer. She shares secrets of success and the strategies behind her revolutionary sales approach to show you how to embrace and channel your own power in any room. Now, in her capacity as lead benefit auctioneer for the firm, she has led auctions for over 600 organizations and trains Christie's charity auctioneers, raising over $500 million for nonprofits globally. Okay, that
you can come to us anytime you
exactly.
want.
Exactly, and
I need you, Lydia.
That goes right to my heart. So, and at the same time, Lydia travels around the country. She's lecturing on the art of selling, speaking to groups about empowering women in the workplace. She was named one of New York's most influential women by Gotham Magazine. She's been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Cranes, Elle. She's appeared in Vanity Fair, Women's Wear Daily, Vogue, Town and Country, and WorkingMother.com. So to me, this is just a perfect synergy for the message that we're trying to get out there. So, Lydia, I just want you to know, I want to welcome you to Answers for the Family and just thank you for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, such
absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I just want to make one quick correction. The book is actually The Most Powerful Woman in the Room Is You.
Is You.
Which is such an important distinction because I sold the book as The Most Powerful Woman in the Room. But as I was writing it, I really thought to myself, this book isn't a book about me. It's a book for other women to learn what I've learned and to just pass along these lessons in a way that is a fun read, but makes them think about the way that we are working and living our lives and how we could just make small changes and really amp it up, live our dreams in a big way.
Well, and I wanted to add something too, because I speak with the owners here at the station and they send me statistics and things in regards to our listenership. And I've been told that that like over 56% of our listeners are female. So we have a strong female audience, and we have a lot of professional women, a lot of teachers, a lot of psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists. So I think that this is a perfect fit for people who can benefit from your book and just benefit from listening to you on the air with us.
Excellent. Well, thank you for the opportunity. I'm very excited to be here.
So, you know, now share with us with all of these titles that we've just read. It's obviously a huge job to take on. How did you get started on this path?
Well, I have been the lead benefit auctioneer for Christie's, which for most people, they probably don't know what that means. So I should probably just back up. Mm-hmm. Essentially, what I do is I get on stage at large galas where people are trying to raise money for nonprofits or for charities. And I am in charge of making that happen. And that essentially means that I'm on stage really inspiring and motivating an audience behind a cause to basically get them to open their wallets in a major way. And what I've learned, because I started doing this when I was about 24, is you know, there's certain lessons that I think as a woman were really holding me back. And once I unlocked those things in a very public forum, I realized that I was really unstoppable in life, in business, in anything that I was asking for, because there was a way that I could do it that was different than my male colleagues, not a better way, just a different way. And that was really what this book sort of started as. And I saw this as an opportunity to tell a story that highlighted a lot of successes, but a lot of failures along the way too. I have a 20-year career path at Christie's. And because I've been at the company for so long, I've been able to really fail spectacularly, but also have people behind me who know that I can do better sometimes, which also allows me the confidence to pick myself back up and just keep going, even when I feel like something has gone really badly.
Nice. You just said something that I would like to ask a question about. You said you unlocked things. Were these the things that you unlocked? Is it because of our upbringing, your upbringing? That we have certain things that don't make us powerful, that don't make us succeed?
I think so. I mean, I grew up in the South. I grew up in Louisiana, and mm-hmm. I grew up with a family of two boys and two girls. So I like to say that I'm a perfect case study because boy, girl, raised by the same parents, listening to the same message always about how we could really do anything that we wanted with our lives and we should really go after things. And yet I would look at my brothers who... It almost seemed like the world had a different agenda for them at times. And so by the time I hit my early 20s, I was watching my brothers in business sort of driven in their careers, making things happen. And I started in this, I didn't even really think of it as a career, frankly. I thought it was just a place I kind of wandered in every day in my 20s to do my job and was having fun and having a great time. And so all of these things that for some reason my brothers inherently knew, and I don't necessarily think it was my parents telling them. I think it was, you know, their friends or their peers or frankly, even the people that they were working for at the time, it was like, you are going to have to go to work. You're going to have to make a paycheck. That paycheck will support your family. And I was sort of like, oh, well, I'll go to work and I'll get this paycheck. And then, you know, I'm not thinking about saving because no one's really talked to me about that. And I would never think about asking for more of my salary because I'm just lucky to get to go to work every day because, you know, all of these things that actually aren't true at all.
Yep.
And about 10 years into my career, I just had this incredible moment where I found out that I was making a third of what I should have been making, legitimately a third. I'm not making up a number. Like we had a new head of HR who sort of pulled me aside and said, you are wildly underpaid. Are you aware of that? And because I was just, of course, so grateful to have a job and a place to go where I thought that I was just getting paid what I was supposed to get paid and I should never really question it. Mm-hmm. It really startled me. I mean, it shocked me to my core. And then I got really upset because I felt like, you know, maybe I just hadn't been asking the right questions. But then when I thought about it, every time I had asked a question, I got the answer, well, you really just work for, you know, the glory of the job or the glamour of the brand of the company that you work for. And what I say now to the women that I speak in front of is, you have to understand there is no such thing. You go to work to get a paycheck. And every time you walk in to negotiate, you should be asking for the most money you can possibly get because you are the only person who's going to ask for that money. Nobody hands you money just for walking in the door. They will continue to pay you as much as you need to get paid to come back. No one's thinking, oh, I should pay that person more all the time. So my whole message in this book is really not only, I mean, this is one lesson that I think is very work-related, but I also just say to women in general, finance is a very important part of our lives. And a lot of us, I know I was guilty of this for so many years, just kind of shove it to the side. Like, I don't want to think about it or, you know, it's kind of scary. And so I'll just kind of hide behind it. We really have to own it to feel powerful because we have to be able to afford the lives that we want in whatever capacity that is and however that looks.
You know, I want to add something, and we have something that we're doing. It's a little new this year. We're doing Facebook Live, and for those of you that want, you can go on Facebook Live through LA Talk Radio. I think that if you went on Facebook Live right now, you would be able to look at Gabriella and you could see the synergy that's going on as she's smiling and she's nodding as you're saying this. There is a connection that's happening here in which she's just lighting up like, oh my God, this I get. Yes, yes, yes. So, yeah. But, yeah. But, yeah. So, but she's doing it with her face because you're talking. But anyway, I'm enjoying it. So I'm just thought this is a good time to share with other people that if they want to see that same type of synergy to go right ahead.
Well, you know, the other funny thing is I've done a lot of speaking around this book, and one of the first lunches that I did was for a group of women who were older than me. I mean, I'm 40, and the women in the room were in their 50s and 60s, and I kind of thought to myself, like, I hope this book resonates, because honestly, I was thinking this was more of a graduation gift to women in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, kind of figuring out their path, or, you know, they've had children and are coming back into the work environment, or frankly, they just want to own whatever space they're in. And it was interesting because I looked up, I did a reading of the third chapter that I was just referencing, and I talk about that part about working for the glamour of the job. And I looked up when I was finished, and there was a woman who was crying. And I sat down at the table, and she said to me, "You have no idea how many times I heard that and how frustrated I was." And to see you write that in a book of a company that you're still working in shows me that we are starting to make real strides. And it gave me chills, because all I could think of, I have two daughters, was, you know what, when they come up and they are in their sort of 30s and 40s, they will have heard this message loud and clear. And hopefully they'll be like, of course, Mom, like, obviously, because it will be so, we will be so much further away from where we are right now that this conversation won't even need to be had anymore.
But I have one question, Lydia. Do you believe that the glamour of the job, and I don't want to deviate because I love your subject, but just real quickly, could you answer if you think that that is something that women hear? Because I do not know if men hear this. Because
yes,
a man
I
has
do.
Never
I mean,
told me that.
Absolutely. I not only do I think we hear it, I know that we hear it. And I say in the book, you know, in that third chapter, the person that I went to talk about a salary negotiation, it was after I'd had this conversation with the head of HR that all of a sudden my eyes were wide open. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, our chief marketing officer isn't working for the glamour of a brand. He has a 6-story townhouse in London and drives a Jaguar. So seriously, there is a disconnect here as to whom is working where and for what reason. And I think that also, you know, in many ways, and Alan, you could weigh on this too, but I feel like in so many respects as women, we're really taught that, you know, asking for money or talking about money is rude, or maybe we shouldn't do it because we don't want other people to feel uncomfortable. Whereas with my husband and even my brother, I mean, we're constantly on each other about what they're making, and it's like there's just an ease with which they banter about it that I'm only starting to see now with my female friends. But I think it's so important because it makes it transparent, and that is important.
And, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm feeling great gratitude for my own parents. And one of the reasons is that we were raised in a situation and with two girls and two boys, there was no such thing as men's work or women's work or boys' work or girls' work. So it was, you know, if we were finishing dinner, it was, okay, boys are going to wash, girls are going to dry, and then we're going to switch that. Or if it's the weekend and if it's cutting the grass, or if it's setting up a paper route or whatever it was, is that there was never a division of that.
Distinction.
Yeah. And I think that that's where we need to start. We need to start really early, because if you're, if you're telling them, you know, that, you know, there is a difference and you start at that early age, I think that's where the conditioning is happening, and that's where we need to stop it. That would be my thought.
It's interesting because I was with my in-laws this weekend, who I love. They're fantastic in-laws. And my mother-in-law said to me, I have three children. I have a 6-year-old daughter, a 4-year-old son, and a 2-year-old daughter. And we were having lunch, and she said to me, so what sports are we going to get Henry into, meaning my 4-year-old son? And I said, well, for Beatrice, my older, I was thinking that she could try. And because to me, I was like, why are we skipping down to the four-year-old who isn't really that fast and can't really run yet because he's still four, whereas my six-year-old is super fast. And, you know, I was like, why are we only talking about the four-year-old? Because he's a boy? Is that like, you know, can Beatrice not do that? And I had that moment where I realized, like, that's really the way that she thinks. Mm-hmm. She doesn't think that my daughter should be thinking about sports. You know, she should probably be doing something like the doll making class or something like that. So it is interesting. It's like those little things that along the way that start so early that are almost, you know, we don't think about them like that. And now we are kind of thinking about them like that, which is good because I think you're right. It's just giving everyone the opportunity to try both and see where things work out and what they like and making them do the same thing and holding everyone to the same standard.
Yeah, exactly. And especially where it is work involved, you know, that if you're getting the focus in regards to work and you think that somehow you're not supposed to be able to do that, we're just going to keep passing that on from generation to generation until it gets, you know, made a little bit more simple, but also more equal.
Right. Absolutely.
I have a question that I'm dying to ask you. Okay.
Sure,
so in your book, you discuss your strike method. What is it and yes. why is it important?
So because I'm an auctioneer and I go on stage shortly after dinner most times at these charity galas. So imagine everybody goes in for cocktails and then we all sit for dinner. And then I get a tap on my shoulder around 10, 15 minutes before I go on stage. And then, you know, I'll be seated next to, let's pretend I'm seated next to Alan or to you, Gabrielle, and we're meeting mm-hmm. for the first time. We've been chatting for 45 minutes. And then I go on stage and 10 minutes later, I'm in front of a crowd of 1,000 people conducting an auction and very much in control. And this is my room. And people always ask me, or historically ask me, how do you do that? Like, how do you go from I'm sitting next to you having dinner to this woman on stage who is literally commanding a room and no one is talking and she's in charge and is raising millions of dollars for a nonprofit? So I have a gavel because mm-hmm. I'm an auctioneer. And
although
most auctioneers don't necessarily use their gavel that much, because I started when I was 24 and I was young for the field, especially in the field of mostly men, usually British in their 50s and 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. I kept going out on these auctions and people would look at me like I was crazy when I walked in the door. They were it was almost like they were looking past me to find the real auctioneer. They were like, who is this young woman and why is she here and where is our real auctioneer? And I used that gavel almost to command authority when I got on stage, and it's never left me. And one guy once said to me, he's like, you should patent that move when you just walk out there and slam it down three times as hard as you possibly can. And I realized that for me has become that transformative moment where, you know, I'm just Lydia who's sitting next to you at dinner. And then I'm Lydia who is on stage and is going to take every dollar out of your wallet. And that gavel strike for me is that transitional moment. And so what I say to people whenever they're having anything that is going on in their life where they need to sort of summon that courage is to find your strike method. Find that moment for you or that action or that sentence that you need to really propel you into a sale or a difficult conversation or a negotiation, and come at it from a point of strength. And so I often say to people, especially when I'm teaching the auctioneers, have your first line memorized or have your first line committed to memory to the point where it wouldn't matter if, like, you know, the fire alarm went off in the middle of it, you would know exactly what you were going to say, because that will make mm-hmm. you feel like you are ready to go and you will not feel like you're nervous, and your nerves will start to subside the minute the words come out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. So that's really what I say the strike method is. And, you know, people have different ways of doing it. I have in the book, I have case studies and I ask different women to sort of talk about their strike method. And I have an Olympic rower who said that, you know, she always puts her hands on the back of the woman in front of her just to sort of like get the power from her as well so that she's ready to go. I have another woman who works with a nonprofit and she's like, I always try to remember why I'm there right before I walk in the room, like think of the kids that I foster and why I'm there and what I'm doing that for. So I think we all have our own strike method. We just have to figure out what it is. And again, I feel like the tips in the book, even though I wrote it as the most powerful one in the room, is you really can be applied to anyone. But it certainly works very well in public speaking.
And I'm glad that you pointed that out, because, and I had the same feeling, you know, is that I'm reading this going, I don't really think that it really has a gender effect, because many of the things you're talking about are things that any of us can do. But I was going to ask you, and you mentioned a lot of of well-known, successful women who give that aura of being powerful. Have you studied or put together anything and learned that there are certain qualities that you think they have or that make a very powerful woman?
Well, I think it's really what I talk about in the entire book, and even the title of the book, The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You. It's the people who really believe in their own power, and they don't look around for other people's sort of, they don't need anyone else to give them affirmation for what they already know. And a couple of people have asked me that question, and I will tell you that the most interesting thing about writing this book for me was when I asked people for the case studies, it was the women who are indisputably the most powerful women in any room, people like Martha Stewart or Nina Garcia, who are featured in the book, Barbara Corcoran, who got back to me without, first of all, they were the first ones to get back to me with a yes. And secondly, they never asked me who else was in the book. The women who I didn't even really know, frankly, they were, you know, people I'd asked, friends. I was like, who's the most powerful woman in your industry that you know that you would recommend? And it was interesting. A lot of them, some of them are in the book, some of them are not. The first question they asked is, well, who else is in the book through their assistant? Who else is in their book? You know, I mean, Barbara Corcoran's assistant got right back to me. She'd be happy to be included. She'll have her answer to you by Friday. I mean, that to me is a powerful woman. She's like, I don't care who else is in this book. I'm putting my name on it. The most powerful woman in the room is you. That's me. Here we go. And so I think that was a very interesting thing for me to realize. And really, I think it helped me even, I mean, I wrote a book called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You. I now have to be a powerful woman, whether or not I like it. And I feel like even when I used to tell people the name of the book, I would almost sort of grimace when I said it, because it just seemed so like, this is my book. This is who I am. And now, I mean, I'm like singing it to people. This is my book. It's Hot Pink. You know, and I think that's what it takes to be a powerful woman. You just have to believe in yourself. That's what makes you powerful.
Now how have things changed for you? Because when we first started and Gabriella talked about the fact that she drives around in a vehicle that says Dare to Be Kind, that she feels that, you know, everybody's looking, so you need to be kind. Do you have that same thing to where you need to be the most powerful woman in the room because of the fact that you've written this book?
Yes, I do actually really, without any question, feel right now. And it's actually, I mean, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy now, because I've written the book and now I take auctions, and it's announced at the beginning of the auction, the author of The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You. And sometimes my strike method, I slam down the gavel and I say, well, I wrote a book about it, so it has to be true. and so it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, it really, you know, what you put out there about yourself, people come back to you and they believe that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I can tell you, just even corporately in a company that I worked for 20 years, I mean, you have no idea how many emails I get from my colleagues daily that are sort of like, there's a powerful woman conference, you should be there. Oh, Lydia, there's a panel discussion about women who are powerful, you should be on that. like, I don't know when all of a sudden I became the branded powerful woman of Christie's, but here I am.
This is what happens when you put a book out there.
It's amazing. It just opens all these doors. So. Super. So yes, I understand that very much, Gabriella.
Thank you. Hey, negotiating for the women and the men listening out there that might not be good at it. Negotiating and how to be the best advocate for you. Do you have some tips on that?
Absolutely. I love talking about negotiating. Okay. First and foremost, one of my biggest tips in negotiation is to listen and not be so quick to talk. Because I think that one of the biggest issues people make when they are negotiating is that they come out immediately and they sort of state their needs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, without even understanding what is going on in the mind of the person across the table from them. And I say when I'm on stage a lot of times, because I don't know an audience, I will throw the question out to the audience as to where we start the bidding. Now, remember, this is a charity auction. This is not an art auction where the numbers are fixed. This is just sort of the perceived value of a puppy that I'm selling on stage. But, you know, whereas I might have started it at $1,000 or $500 or $200, sometimes someone in the audience will throw it on a much bigger number, which is amazing, because then we start so much higher than where I would have started. And so what I often say with negotiation, especially when it comes to salaries and things like that, is don't cap yourself. Just because you think, you know, I could never get more than a 5 or 10% raise, sometimes you have to, as I say, in one of the case studies, one of the women says it, you have to make them win. Throw out a big number and see what they do. You may not get it, but all of a sudden they may be thinking one number, you throw out a huge number, and all of a sudden they're like, oh God, now I'm gonna have to pay this person even more than I thought. And you're in a much better spot than you originally were. So that would definitely be my biggest tip with negotiation. Listen and then make them wince in that order.
Okay, thank you so much.
Now, and while we're talking about tips, you know, we're coming up on summer, which means there's a lot of people that are graduating from college and they're going to be out interviewing. So for women that are going out to find that job that they want, what would be some tips that you would give them to walk into that interview and command it to a point that it's going to get you the job and not yet so much that maybe it scares them off?
Absolutely. So if there is anyone who is about to do an interview, I give this in granular detail in my book because I think it's such an important thing. First of all, be early, not just on time, be early so that you do not end up being the person who's 5 minutes late. Because as a person who is literally watching the clock all day because I need to be home with my children at a certain time every single day, anybody who throws off my calendar immediately is somebody that I'm thinking, I just don't feel like this person's going to be the right fit for a job in my office. I always say, make sure that you arrive in the dress suitable for the work that you are going to do. I think this is a very important thing. If you're coming to work at an auction house, just take a glance, look around and sort of see what the corporate dress is. And just make sure that you're in that respect dressing that part. If you're going to work for a tech company, that is a totally different skill set. If you're going to work for a bank, that's a completely different dress code. But just may have an awareness so that you don't walk in looking completely inappropriate for a culture that is one way and everybody is dressed in a certain way. And then all of a sudden you walk in and you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? Because that's going to make you feel so uncomfortable. So just do a little research about what a corporate culture is like. Because I think that that's such an easy mistake to make and you don't want to make it. You want to walk in, you want to feel great from the minute you get there. And so just do that extra work because that's going to be a key thing. So you walk in the door, you've met the person that you're with, make sure that you have Googled them. Find out everything you can about that person and the industry that they work in so that the questions you are asking are not the very basic questions that shows that you have done no prep work before you get in there. You know, this is not 10, 15 years ago when Google didn't exist. Most people, especially if you're meeting with someone, even mid-level or even like a senior person at a company, that person has been there long enough to have some kind of Google record. And a lot of times, even like a short Google search will help you find points of connectivity, which in an interview is what's going to make you stand out. So if you Google someone and you see that they're from, you know, in my instance, I had an informational interview with a girl earlier this week, and she said, you know, I Googled you before I came, which, I mean, I was like, that's amazing. Great. Thank you for doing that. And she said, and I noticed that you were from the South. And so, you know, we had a couple of seconds of just sort of, or a couple of minutes of just, you know, sort of talking about having grown up in the South and how she moved to New York and the things that we both saw. And I remember thinking, like, that's such a smart thing to do, because if you're from the South and you live in New York, it's really one of those things you always want to talk about because they're so different. You know, and then she asked a couple of questions about that, and those led into Christie's and my job here. And I think that those sort of small things help really guide a conversation in an interview. And a successful interview feels more like a conversation and less like a, here's my first question, this is my second question. You know, so think through what you want the interview to be and think through what you want to get from that interview, because there's nothing worse than walking in for a half an hour and then leaving and A, not making an impression upon the person who's across from you, and B, not feeling like you really got anything out of it. So those would be a couple of my key pointers for a good interview. And the last one is be cognizant of the time of the person across the table from you. So if there's been a half hour allotted, one of the best interviews I've ever had, this guy said to me, we're 27 minutes into a 30-minute interview. I want to be cognizant of your time and just to let you know that if you have any other questions that I can answer for you, I've left a little time for that too. I remember just thinking, good Lord. And even though he ended up not working on my team, I called, he didn't want to work in my department. I called the person whose department that he wanted to work in and said, you've got to get this guy on your team. He's a star. And he was interning there within the summer. So I feel like those just small things really help the person across the table from you feel like you've taken the time to get to know them, to know the company, and you're coming and asking really dynamic, thoughtful questions, which is what you want from somebody who's on your team.
We are talking with Lydia Fenette. Her new book is The Most Powerful Woman in the Room Is You. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Hi, everyone, and we're back with Answers for the Family. Our guest name is Lydia Fenette, and she wrote a book called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room Is You. Thank you, Lydia, for being there. I wanted to make sure I did that one right. I have a question. I have a question for you. In the book, you discuss the importance of being authentic. And the reason I wanted to ask you this question is it's become kind of a little bit of a hype word. And so if there are women or men out there that don't really understand anymore what that means, everyone knows what it is to be yourself. But what do people really mean with the word authentic?
I think it means, especially as it pertains to what I'm talking about in the book, which is selling yourself. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times people emulate what they see in front of them. So I speak from experience here, having worked at an auction house where, as I said earlier, a lot of the people that I work with were men who were much older than me. And so because I felt very uncomfortable in my role in my 20s, I just did everything that I had seen them do, which wasn't, it didn't make me feel anything but like I was putting on a performance and sort of putting on a stage face, if you will, in order to go to meetings or to get on stage as an auctioneer. And what I realized one evening after I'd been very sick during the day, and I got on stage and I just felt like I couldn't even really pretend to be anyone other than the person that I actually am, was that all of a sudden I felt very comfortable on stage. And I felt very comfortable in my role because I was treating the audience like I would treat a group of friends, as opposed to sort of standing up in front of them in this very different, I mean, I was even affecting a British accent, which I think most auctioneers that I was working with at the time had. So it must have been a very funny thing to watch. But when I got on stage and really started acting like myself, I felt very comfortable in my own skin and I felt very powerful in that role. And so that's what I think authenticity is. It's sort of like strip away what you've seen and really find out what about you is appealing to people in front of you, especially if it's in sales or any kind of public speaking, or frankly, even in life. Like, I think a lot of times we feel uncomfortable because we're not acting like ourselves. And if you think about just sort of sitting down with a glass of wine and the way that you would relate to a friend or talk to a friend, that's the kind of person that people want to be with. It's a person who's empathetic and a person who's acting as if they're in the middle of a conversation as opposed to a person who's putting on a whole stage face to have any role in life.
Mm-hmm. I love that answer.
You know, we have a couple of listener questions, and I want to take this time to thank them. Because we do this show live in the middle of the day, there are people out there that work, many of which are teachers, and they send in questions ahead of time, and we try to answer them, and they tell us they listen later on through iTunes or Stitcher or one of those formats or platforms. So this question says, My daughter has struggled to grow her business. She is a lovely person, but somewhat shy and has always had a difficult time promoting herself. I truly believe she would blossom if she were more outgoing and confident. I ordered your book for her last week, and I'm anxious to read it myself so I can understand the process. Thank you for the encouragement and guidance. And this is from Brenda in California.
Oh, that's so great, Brenda. And I can't tell you how many times I speak with either women who say this or women who say this about their daughters. I think one of the hardest things that women face, especially in sales roles, is that I think for a long time we felt like sales, like we were doing something wrong if we were selling something or promoting something that we made. And I think what I say to most people is you have to think about selling is separate from emotion. Mm-hmm. Selling is not an emotional thing. Even if you have created what you are selling, someone is not rejecting you when they reject what you are selling. They are rejecting the item. And you have no idea why that is happening. I think sometimes people feel like, well, I made this bag, so this is me. I poured my whole heart into this bag. No, this is a bag. The person who's standing across from you who is purchasing that bag doesn't know that you've poured your whole heart into it. And honestly, sometimes if you don't say it, it almost makes it better because then you don't feel so awkward because then the person really feels like, oh God, now I don't want this bag and this person is clearly so attached to it. So I should say first and foremost, a lot of confidence comes from just using, like it's very hard to do this and I know this, but I would say to your daughter, every time you go to a place when you are trying to make a sale or trying to grow your business and you feel like you are upset that someone is rejecting you, stop and think to yourself, and sometimes even say it out loud, they are not rejecting me. They are rejecting a business item. They are rejecting a handbag. Whatever it is, they are not rejecting me. They are rejecting something that they don't need at that moment. And it is part of an ongoing conversation. So just because they don't want it then, doesn't mean 6 months from now, they might not want it then. So don't close that door either. Keep those conversations open. Oh, you don't want this is what I do on stage all the time to my underbidder. Oh, you know, sir, you're not going to spend $1,000 on that this evening. Well, I know you have $950 burning a hole in your pocket because that's what you just spent. So I'll come back to you later. So he doesn't feel embarrassed. I don't feel like the sale is dead. I don't take it personally. And I walk away from it feeling confident. So I think with sales and selling ourselves, that's just the one thing that we really have to get into our minds. It is not an emotional thing and it needs to be separate. And sometimes it makes it easier when you're not thinking of it as, ugh, they're rejecting me. You just think of it as they are rejecting something outside of me. I just happen to be the person who's facilitating that sale or that conversation.
Now, Lydia, I've been blessed with the fact that I've been able to work with a lot of people that are in the helping field. So it, mm-hmm. be it working with at-risk youth or with people that are in more need. And what I hear quite a bit from them and probably do the same myself is that because we are helper bees and we want to help people, I think it might be more difficult for us to ask for the money because of the fact that we would do this anyway because it's who we are. It's what we want to do. So what do you tell those people that are out there? They're making a positive difference in the world. They're helping a lot of people and enjoying it and would love to do it for free if we could, if somebody would pay all the bills. What do you tell them so that they get the value that they should get for what they're doing?
Again, I think it goes back to what I was just saying as it pertains to emotion. I think sales is not, and this is something that everybody thinks, and I don't know where this starts. I definitely see it with women, frankly, more than men, and certainly with people who are in industries where they're helping other people. I think more than anything, you just have to think to yourself, and I would say this to anyone who is listening right now, that you are providing a service, you are providing a gift. And your gift is to be able to take care of yourself and to live the way that you want to live your life. And that takes a paycheck, period, end of sentence. It's not dirty. It's not bad. It's not, there's nothing wrong with it. You deserve the life that you want to live. And if you are offering a service, you deserve to be compensated for that. In much the same way when I first started working here and they kept telling me that I work for the glamour of the job. What did I say at the beginning? You don't work for the glamour of the job. You work for a paycheck. It's the same thing. You are helping people who are, you know, at-risk youth, these people who are, you are literally changing their lives. And you deserve a paycheck for doing that work because you have come to a place in your career where you are successful and you are intelligent enough and you have learned enough to be able to be an expert in that field. And you deserve to be paid for that. And you cannot feel guilty for that. And you cannot feel guilty for living, wanting to live the life that you want to live. And sometimes it takes a paycheck to do that. So those two things need to be, again, thought of. You deserve to get paid for the job that you do.
I agree. My mind agrees with everything you have said. However, my heart skips a tiny little beat here.
Yeah,
if that's
course,
okay.
Of
and
course.
And I'm saying
of
the
course.
Heart because it is the heart that skips the beat, because a child, you know that when you have that child in front of you, there's just, I don't know, I call it magic. Maybe I should call it another word, but it encompasses everything I feel. And so that magic between that kid and you, and it doesn't matter what age, these kids are anywhere between, I'm just going to say an age group, between 5 and under 25. There is just, it's a little miserable pile of body that's in front of you. And your hope makes those shoulders go back up and suddenly it's human again. And it sounds dramatic, but how in the heck do you put a price tag on that? And
yeah,
then
I know.
When you do to the parents, you should see their faces. Whoa, the kindness expert. Whoa, to Alan. Whoa, runaway teens expert. Whoa, what do you mean? You know? And then, my heart falls in my shoe. It does.
Yeah. But I mean, I would say to you as well, I mean, how long have you learned, how long have you spent becoming the person who can make a child's shoulders raise again? Like how many hours of practice, how many years of
55.
Learning, how many things have you done, you know? And so that, again, I hear what you're saying, and I definitely feel exactly what you're feeling, especially having children. Mm-hmm. But my point is, If you have gotten to a place in your life where you are the expert in your field, then you can also choose to get paid the money that you deserve to get paid for the work that you do. And at times when you feel it is right, you can also choose to not charge. And those are things that you can choose to do too. But my point is that your time is worth money.
Yeah, there
and
has
you
to
want
be balance.
To be able that and that is really the biggest takeaway. Like, and you can't forget that, because you could be living on the street if you, your entire life, just continue to give and give and give and never ask in return.
But your key word was perfect there. How many years did it take you to be able to lift their shoulders? That was the perfect sentence.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I agree.
I think Alan and I both.
Yeah. We were nodding at each other going, yeah.
Yep.
Now we have another comment. It's a question and comment that's coming in from a listener. This one reads, I was especially impressed by your comments about being authentic, keeping one's word, and leading by example. My question is, would this book be appropriate for teens? Because as a high school teacher, I have a reading list for my students and feel this is a wonderful message for them as they enter into their childhood. And this is from Olivia in Utah.
Absolutely. And it's one of my favorite stories from this book is one of my best friends listened to the Audible. I read the Audible and she listened to it in the car with her daughter, who's in third grade. And her daughter, she said that over the course of the past couple of weeks, her daughter has been quoting things back to her from the book. She's like, well, Miss Lydia said, da, 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 da. And she said, actually, not from the authentic chapter, but the chapter about public speaking. Her daughter was going into a guitar recital. And the night before, she walked into her room to say goodnight. And she said, Mom, can we listen to Miss Lydia's book again about public speaking before my concert tomorrow? It was so sweet. And she said, hand to God, like that, those words came from your book and they made her feel better. And so absolutely. I mean, there's never a time when young girls are too young to hear this message, because frankly, they grow up with it lodged firmly in their brain. I mean, you should hear my 6-year-old. She's telling all her friends how they can do everything they want as long as they set their mind to it and follow through and write their roadmap. And it's such a wonderful thing to hear at the age of six that she's even thinking, you know.
Super.
I read her about the negotiation. I'm like, you better understand when you get into the office when you're older, if that's the path you choose. So I think that, yeah, these are life lessons, all of them. And as I said, they're male or female. I do think that especially young women and girls need that extra oomph sometimes. So that's why I wrote it for women, but it really goes for everyone.
Yeah. I was going to say, and a great message at any age.
Any age. We're almost out of time, but I really wanted to ask you real quickly, a very short question. You just said Audible. Could you tell me, for the listeners and for us, is your book available and where is it available and in which format?
It's available online. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it in independent sellers or the USA edition at Target, where I wrote a letter in the front. And then you can also order it off my website, lydiafinette.com, or off of my Instagram, lydiafinette.com. And then I also read the Audible. So it's available on audiobook too.
And Kindle format, right?
Yes, and Kindle format as well.
Super.
Sorry, I'm such a reader. I don't even really know. I've
thank you.
I don't listen to myself read the book, except when I was in the recording studio, obviously. So.
All right. Well, for everybody out there, if you're driving and you weren't able to write that down as far as where to get it, you can go to theanswersforthefamily.com. We'll have all of Lydia's information on there so that you can get the book. I highly recommend it for everybody, not just women. Lydia, thank you so much for coming on. If you're in Southern California, please give us a call. Look us up. Feel free. Come in studio. Come in studio and join us. We have fun here.
Yes.
Great. Or if you have a speaking event that's going on out here, let us know. And if we can help, if we can help get more of our listeners out there to join you at it, we will do that as well.
Yep. And I'll visit you when I'm in New York.
There you go.
I would love that.
Thank you
guys so much. This has been such a pleasure.
Thank you, Lydia.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. Enjoy the day.
You
thank
too.
You.
And for everybody out there, please be sure to put on your calendar. Tune in next Monday when we'll be joined by Kimberly Friedmutter to discuss treating addiction and preventing chronic illness. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com and pick out some ones that you like and pass them on to others. You can also visit our iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or Spreaker. If you subscribe on there, it'll be sent to you automatically. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. And Gabriella, how can they get more information on Dare to Be Kind?
Type daretobekindmovement.com or do hashtag daretobekind and you will find us everywhere.
For everybody out there, be kind, be good human beings, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Right here on LA Talk Radio.